Milo's Pro Rewards members. Save big during Lowe's Pro Savings Days. Get your member volume discount, plus an extra 5% off eligible orders with a quote of $2,000 or more. And buy more and save more with up to 20% off in-stock molding when you spend $250 or more. Members get more at Lowe's. Valid through 7/31. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Can't be combined with any contract or special pricing. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit the Pro Desk or Lowe's.com/terms for more details. Subject to change.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This is Kid in a Cage.
Florida versus Timothy Ferriter.
A father accused of locking his adopted son inside a cage. Join us as we hear the facts behind these charges
through live courtroom audio from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
All rise. Court is now in session. The Honorable Judge Howard Coates presiding.
Very good afternoon, everyone. You may be seated. All right, give me just a moment. Mark, can you get Zoom set up while I'm getting started here? You do it on this computer and I'll just join the meeting on this one. Mark, did you join the meeting or did you start as the host? Because it's...
I started it as usual.
I should be signing in on that one.
This one?
No, go to the Division B meeting down there, the recurring meeting to the left.
To the left.
Yeah, that one. Not the child, no, that one. That should do it.
I clicked on the wrong one.
All right, that should.
Yep, you got them joining out. Okay. Is that one coming?
Yeah, let me just get out and start again. No, I think it's fine because they probably gonna use that for closings.
Okay.
All right, now that we've got the technical stuff out of the way, we are back in session on State versus Ferreter. Let me have appearances, please. Okay, all sides ready to continue with the discussion that we started yesterday afternoon regarding the jury instructions?
It seems like we are on the same page. Everything, I took out the burden of proof for the defense. I kept it for the state.
So here's the question I have after, and I read this very carefully and looked at it probably more than I should. But I came away after reading Radford with the feeling that in this particular case where I've limited, based on the motion for JOA by the defense, to just that prong in the information that dealt with the confinement and the caging that did not involve bodily injury and did not involve corporal punishment, I came away with the feeling that the defense does not apply with what's left of count one, but it would apply to the lesser. And in looking at the draft of the instructions, it seems to me the defense is included both as to the charge of aggravated assault and to the lesser, but my reading of the law is that it doesn't apply now to count one as it currently stands with how I've narrowed it. So let me hear both sides weigh in on that, and I apologize if I'm raising an issue that both of you hadn't looked at, but that's something that jumped out at me as I looked at this.
That did occur, yes, that I agree, Your Honor. That did occur to the state because that there's no
corporal punishment that's involved in count one anymore.
Right. It's not corporal punishment, it's not reasonable punishment, and it's also not physical punishment. However, jury instructions are sometimes a way in which a case can be reversed.
And so, well, if the state is telling me that you don't want to take a chance and you want it to be included, I won't get in the way of that, but I'm telling you, sitting up here on the bench and looking at the case law, in light of how I've narrowed the case on the count one, I don't think the affirmative defense of corporal punishment, a permissible corporal punishment, applies to count one. It clearly applies to the lesser. That's not even an issue for me. And I will say that you've drafted, even in count one, you've drafted the instruction the way I would have ordered it this morning, putting the burden of persuasion on the state. In light of everything I looked at, that would be where I would place the burden under the case law. There's no perfect guidance on that, but that's kind of, I'm doing the same thing that you're doing, being cautious and putting the burden on the state so that if there's any error, it's something that shouldn't be harmful to the defendant.
Right. So we put it in because the defense was requesting it. Let me think about if we want to remove it for a second. I certainly was going to argue that it doesn't apply as charged, but we'll see what the defense has to say first.
All right, so let me hear from you, Mr. Waheed. You moved successfully for JOA on a portion of count one, which knocked out the great bodily harm aspect of that, and which in the court's view left me with, as far as count one goes, with that prong that I read when we were discussing the issue that dealt with the confinement and the caging that did not involve physical punishment. So by you being successful in that portion of your motion for JOA, what's your position now in terms of what I've stated that I don't think that the affirmative defense applies as presently stands with the count one for aggravated battery or aggravated child abuse, I'm sorry.
Sure. Sure. Obviously, my position is it does apply.
But how? Let me ask you. Tell me, because if count, you agree that the aggravated child abuse count now does not involve any corporal punishment aspect, right? And the affirmative defense relates to permissible corporal punishment, doesn't it?
No, it's physical discipline, Judge. The actual wording is, it is not a crime for a parent or a child of a child to impose reasonable physical discipline on a child for misbehavior under the circumstances, even though physical injury resulted from the discipline.
All right, so your position is that the caging is the physical discipline.
Right.
That it doesn't have to be corporal. I'm not sure I agree with that, but I understand your position. So if that's your position, I can see where you would argue that it comes and applies to count one as well, even with the way that I've narrowed it.
Yes, correct. And the instruction as it goes on is it doesn't say anything about corporal punishment, to be clear. It does say physical discipline, and it's talking about whether or not it was reasonable. I think that is exactly the situation we are in right now. So I do think it applies. Every case I've read, I'm not sure where the court felt it didn't apply.
Did what didn't apply?
That this affirmative defense would not apply in this case.
No, I feel that it doesn't apply to count one for aggravated child abuse, but that it would apply for any lesser of that. And let me tell you why I get to that, and you can deal with it specifically, because when I looked at the Radford decision, the Supreme Court of Florida makes the statement as follows. We agree with the 4th and 2nd districts that under the current statutory scheme, there is no parental privilege barring prosecution for felony child abuse under Section 827.03. Then they go on and say, indeed, Section 827.031, defining felony child abuse, makes no exceptions for parents or the equivalent. And then they say this, and this is what leads me to my conclusion about if the count doesn't involve corporal punishment as it presently stands, then maybe the affirmative defense doesn't apply. And this is what the Supreme Court said. Thus, it is not that felony child abuse by a parent is a non-existent crime, but rather a parent may assert as an affirmative defense his or her parental right to administer reasonable and non-excessive corporal punishment. So the Supreme Court spoke to corporal punishment, and I believe that caging doesn't, at least I wouldn't define it off the top of my head, as being corporal punishment. Corporal punishment in my mind is physical touching, and as the cases talk about, a permissible battery upon a child subject to the reasonableness limitation. So that's, let me have you address that, because that's what led me to the conclusion why I raised the issue right up front as to whether it applies at all to the top level charge.
Yes. So that case, Radford, is before the amended jury instruction. So this jury instruction is actually later in time approved by the Supreme Court. And the jury instruction sits under 16.1 and under 16.3. It does not caveat in any way using the word corporal punishment anywhere. And it doesn't say, it doesn't apply to any of either A, B, C, or D under aggravated child abuse. So A and D are gone, I believe. We're left with B, C.
Spell that out for me.
A was the aggravated battery that the court found didn't apply.
Great bodily harm involving
great bodily harm. And then whatever the last letter was is the one where it talks about specifically intentional child abuse. So those
which
two,
encompasses by definition great bodily harm.
It does.
Yeah.
So those two are gone. But what is left, which was torture, malicious, and unlawful caging, there is nowhere in the instruction that it carves out any exception for the parental affirmative defense for any of those subparts.
Well, okay, so let me, so this, the Radford decision, let me find out. I thought that was dealt in the Radford decision, and what I thought that it said is that any exceptions must be in the statute itself. Let me see if I can find that for a moment. Okay, so they adopt the language, I think, of the previous decision in Radford, where they were citing I made a note of that, so I can't find it right off. Let me just bear with me just for another second. Okay, so the only other thing I would cite in the Radford decision is the Supreme Court's admonition toward the end, where it says, however, we conclude that this difficult task is principally a legislative function better left to the legislature. As the Fourth District has previously observed, cases like this should stand as a warning to those, parents and others alike, who quickly turn to corporal punishment as a solution to child discipline problems. It is apparent that there is a serious risk of going too far every time physical punishment is administered. So that brings me back to where I think I started with this, is that because the corporal punishment is no longer a part of what the jury will hear on the aggravated battery, my conclusion still is that it's not a defense as the count currently stands. But that being said, I understand the state's position, and if the state is telling me that you don't want to take a risk that I'm wrong on this issue and that you would rather the parental affirmative defense be presented to the jury, I'm fine with that. At some point, there's going to be a judge who says that, no, I'm going to stick to my guns, and this is going to way it's going to be, and it'll get tested on appeal again. But I'm not of that ilk at this stage, because the law, to be candid, is not crystal clear on which direction to go here.
Yes, that's correct. We agree with Your Honor, but out of abundance of caution, we're just going to leave it in there.
All right, so that takes away the issue for you, right, Mr. Waheed? So there's no issue then.
But we're still going to argue that, you know, it was not reasonable.
I understand, right? And the permissible limits are an issue with not only the aggravated child abuse count, but it will be an argument with respect to the lesser as well. Okay, so that was what I wanted to let you know that I had gleaned from my review of the decision and the instruction yesterday. I've looked at the instructions that were presented, and everything looks fine to me. Are there any issues that I need to address with respect to the currently presented draft of the instructions?
The only thing was, I didn't know if defense wanted 3.9B, the defendant's statement. The only statements that we have from the defendant are the ones from the video. I don't think that it applies in this case, but I just left it in for them to let me know whether or not.
3.9B. Yes. So what's your position on that?
I don't think it applies, actually. I think that's when there's a statement usually to...
Right, usually a statement made to an officer or something like that, or body cam. So 3.9B will come out. So just remove that from... And before we finalize this, we'll go back through each and every one to make sure we have the proper order. So 3.9 comes out. Any others that should be excluded? And then I'll go through the order in which I'll read the instructions to the jury once we reconvene.
That was it, Your Honor.
Okay, so let me go through the instructions. I'd like everyone to follow with me in the order that I'm going to read these. The jury will be provided with a copy of the instructions in the box, and they will be permitted to take the copy that we give them back to the jury room for deliberations. The only thing they will not be able to take back with them as part of the package is the verdict form. We only ever allow one verdict form to go back to the jury room. Okay, so the preliminary instructions, I will not read them again, but they will be part of the packet, 2.1. The same for 2.1A, note-taking, I will not read that again, but it will be part of the packet. And then introduction to final instructions is where I'll start with the...
For the jury's copy, I did start at
3.1. That's fine. So the 2.1 and 2.1... A, do not have to be a part or part of the jury copied package. Okay, so we'll start at 3.1 as far as what I'll read, then 3.2. So as we go through each one, let me hear yay or nay from both sides so I have on the record both sides' consent. All right, 3.1, everybody's good with, correct?
Yes.
All right. 3.2, statement of the charge. Everybody's good with that one, right?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Then we'll go into 16.1, which is the aggravated child abuse instruction. And I will just note for the record that this instruction, in my view, is drafted in the vein that it puts the burden on the state to prove against the affirmative defense by beyond reasonable doubt.
And, Your Honor, I don't know if your copy had the mental injury, but I had spoken to defense. I took the mental injury out of it.
I think that does need to come out because that's not part of what's left. So
yes.
You're in agreement with that?
I'm in agreement with that.
All right, so the mental injury paragraph comes out. So after the maliciously paragraph, we will then move to the paragraph, it is not a crime. So that will, and then I'll ask that you print me one final set of the changes. Okay. All right, and then we'll go to 9.2, false imprisonment. Everybody good with that?
Yes.
All right, and then 16.6, neglect of a child. Everybody good with that?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, so that will then mean we move on to 3.4, where we talk about any lessors. And so the 3.4 instruction will advise the jury that the lesser for aggravated child abuse is child abuse. Everybody good with that?
Yes.
All right. Defense, good?
Yes, Judge.
Okay. All right, and then that'll take us to reading the lesser for count one of instruction 16.3 for child abuse, and that includes the same burden on the state to disprove the affirmative defense beyond and to the exclusion of a reasonable doubt. And mental injury remains in this one?
Yes.
Okay, all right, good enough. All right, 16.3 is good. All right. 3.5A, principles, everybody good with that?
Yes.
Yes, Judge.
Okay. And then we move into the standard, the 3.7, plea of not guilty, reasonable doubt, and burden of proof. Everybody fine with that, I presume, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, and then weighing the evidence. The only issue I ever have with this is do we need all of paragraphs 1 through 7? Have you, you've already pared this down somewhat, right?
Yes, Your
Honor. All right, are you good with 3.9, Ms. Waheed?
Yes, Judge.
All right, and state is good with this since you presented it. Okay. That takes us to 3.9A, defendant not testifying. Is that going to be the decision that's ultimately going to be made? I'll do the colloquy. All right, so when I get to that, so that means it will be reading 3.9A to the jury. After that, we go to instruction 3.10, rules for deliberation. I assume everybody's fine with that. That's standard?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. And then 3.11, cautionary instructions, again, standard. I assume everybody consents to that?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. And then finally, 3.12, the standard instruction on the verdict. Everybody fine with that, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, and then that takes us to the verdict form. I've looked at the verdict form. I don't see any issue that jumped out at me, so I assume everybody is fine with the verdict form, correct?
So, Judge, the only thing with the verdict form is I do think that there should be underneath aggravated child abuse, we should have a slot for whether they find it's torturous.
Why would that special finding need to be made? Is it for any purpose on sentencing or any other aspect? Because normally I would not do it unless there is a specific need for a specific finding that drives the sentencing decision to be made by the court.
Well, we believe it goes to the unanimity issue, right? Which is that the unanimous found that, for example, that it was child abuse due to unlawful occasion, where they might not be in agreement on that. They might not agree that.
What case do you have to rely on that unanimity is required as to the reason for the finding of guilty on any particular charge?
It's not so much a case, Judge, it goes to the idea of the jury coming to a unanimous decision.
But isn't the prevailing case law that if there are alternative means for finding guilt on a particular count, that case law, as I understand it, is that there doesn't have to be a unanimous agreement on the specific avenues of which you get to an adjudication of guilt, or excuse me, a finding of guilt, but that there has to be unanimity on the finding of guilt at the top level, that there doesn't have to be unanimity on the way you get to that. Do you agree or disagree with that? Yeah. All right, so I'm going to deny the request to have any breakdown of additional findings. Well, I assume the state would be opposing that. I just don't think it's supported by the case law. So any other issues with respect to the finding or the form of the verdict form? Mr. Wahid? All right, so then I'll go over the verdict form in detail. And then lastly... And I typically, in my court, the not guilty is the last one. I have them address the level of guilt based on the highest charge going down to a finding of not guilty. And I can assure you that that has never been a problem in my courts with juries reaching a finding of not guilty if they think a defendant's not guilty. It happens all the time. So I think I'm fine with the order of the presentation of the consideration of the issues for the jury. Then that takes us to 3.12A, single defendant. That's a standard. I'm assuming no one has any issue with that. All right. No. And then lastly, 2.4, evidence of other crimes, wrongs, or acts. I assume this is something the defendant probably requested, right?
No. Yes.
Yeah.
It has to be read in the final
instruction. All right. Okay. So that's fine. And then we'll go into 2.7, and after that point, 2.7 is fine for both sides. Again, it's a standard.
Yeah.
All right. And then we'll move into closing arguments. And then once the closing arguments are completed, I'll then read the final instruction of 3.13, submitting the case to the jury.
Yes.
All right. So that's the order of them. If you can print me out a final reading set, Ms. Black, that comports with what we've done here. And then 1.1 was part of the original instructions. That doesn't need to be part of the package anymore. So just from 3.1 to where I read at the end, that'll be my package for reading to the jurors. Okay, so that takes care of any issues regarding the jury instructions. I think now would be appropriate to address the issue of the defendant testifying or not and the court doing the necessary colloquy on that. All right, so Ms. Murad, I know we talked about it already in the context of the jury instructions. This is a more formal addressing of that issue. Has your client made a decision in this case as to whether he will testify on his own behalf or not?
He has made a decision, Your Honor.
And what is that decision? Okay, so let's hand the mic to Mr. Ferreter. Mr. Ferreter, if you could start off by, you can be seated if you'd like, sir. Go ahead and raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
All right, you can put your hand down, sir. Go ahead and state your name and date of birth, please.
Tim Ferreter, 41775.
All right, and you read, write, and understand English, sir?
I do.
And what's your highest level of education?
College degree.
All right, are you under the influence of any drugs, alcohol, or other medications this morning?
I'm not.
Have you ever been treated for any mental or emotional condition?
I have not.
All right, and just to give you the context of why I'm conducting this colloquy, as you've heard, your attorney has advised me that you've made a decision whether to testify or not. And so, as I mentioned yesterday, I need to make sure that that decision is being made by you knowingly and intelligently, freely and voluntarily. So that's where these questions are intended to go to put me in a position where I can make a factual finding on those items. You understand all that, sir?
I do.
All right, and you're represented by your attorneys, Ms. Murad and Mr. Wahid, in this matter?
Yes, sir.
And are you satisfied with their services?
I am.
All right, and have they done everything that you've asked them to do regarding the presentation of your trial and consideration of whether for you to testify on your own behalf or not?
They have.
All right, and have you had a full opportunity to discuss with your attorneys the pros and the cons and the risk and the consequences of testifying versus not testifying in this matter?
I have.
All All right. And have they fully advised you of all those risks and consequences as far as you're aware of?
They have.
And have they been able to answer all of your questions regarding the various pros and cons, risk and consequences of testifying or not?
They have.
All right. Has anybody, including your attorneys, made any promises, threats, or tried to force you into a decision this morning that would be against your will?
No.
All right. So the reason I ask that is, and you've heard some of this from me before, there are basically three things that a defendant absolutely controls in a criminal proceeding. And what I mean by that is, although you can receive the advice and counsel of your attorneys, ultimately, I don't look to your attorneys to tell me what the decision is. I look to you to tell me what your decision is, because your decision is what governs. Those three things are, one, whether to plead guilty or not guilty, two, whether to go to trial or not go to trial, and three, whether, once you are in trial, whether to testify in your own behalf or not. Obviously, you've already made and gone past two of those decision points, continuing with your plea of not guilty and also continuing with the decision to have a trial. So now we're at that precipice where I told you we would arrive at one day once the trial were to begin as to whether you should make a decision to testify on your own behalf or not. There are certain consequences that I do want you to be aware of if you were to testify on your own behalf. And one of those is that you will be subject to cross-examination by the defense. The only way the defense ever can have an opportunity to cross-examine you in this case is if you take that stand there and you subject yourself to direct examination by your attorneys. Then that opens you up to cross-examination by the state. You understand that?
I do.
All right. Another area is that, do you have any felony convictions or misdemeanor convictions involving truth or dishonesty? They could also bring that out. Now, does the state have anything like that that it would potentially bring out against Mr. Ferreter if he were to testify? All right, so that's not a real worry. It's a worry for a lot of defendants that come before me, but it's not a worry in your case because you have no history. So the real risk is that you're opening up yourself to cross-examination by the state. Based on the colloquy that I've given you thus far, do you have any questions of the state of the court about anything I've discussed or explained to you this morning? All right, after this colloquy, do you feel like you need to take any additional time to speak with your attorneys regarding the decision that I'm going to ask you to tell me in just a moment?
No, thank you.
All right. Have you made a decision in this case whether to testify on your own behalf?
I have.
All right. And what is that decision, Mr. Ferreter?
To not testify.
All right. Based on the court's colloquy of Mr. Ferreter, sir, I find that you're making the decision knowingly and intelligently after having had the opportunity to receive the advice and counsel of your attorney. I also find that I've explained to you the potential risk and consequences of testifying in your own behalf on the stand, including the fact that you would subject yourself to cross-examination. Based on all that, I find that you're also entering into this decision with an appreciation of those risks and consequences, and that you understand the same, and that your decision is being made freely and voluntarily. So I accept your decision not to testify as having been knowingly and intelligently, freely and voluntarily made by you. So that concludes the colloquy on this matter. Sir, you may give your attorney back to Mike, and thank you, sir. All right. We are set to start back. Ms. Murad, you're standing. Anything I need to address? Oh, okay. All right. So we're set to start back with so when we come back at 1 o'clock, the defense will rest. And at that point, I will begin the closing instructions. So we'll immediately move in to closing arguments in the same time limits and deadlines. Time warnings will apply as we put on the record yesterday. Anything else I need to address before we reconvene at 1 o'clock?
No, just are you going to instruct or we start right away? You instruct before or after?
Before or after what?
Closings.
No. I instruct before because I the attorneys, whether you're the state or the defense, spend a lot of time arguing the law in your closing, so I think it's most beneficial to have the jury be advised of what the law is before they hear your closing arguments.
Fine.
Yeah, that's been my normal practice. I assume everybody's in agreement with that, right?
Yeah, the state has no issue.
All right. Okay, well, that's the way we'll do it. Anything else I need to address? Thank you for raising that so that we can address that now and not delay the proceedings any further. So go ahead, Mr. Waheed. So what I'll do is have you make the motion now and make your argument. But I still want you to make the motion on the record after you've rested, and I'll just say same ruling as made previously, if that's my ruling.
Understood.
Whatever I rule at sidebar or in open court now, that will be my ruling, and that'll be the ruling I'll adopt when you renew the motion.
Understood.
So go ahead.
So first, we're going to renew all of our previous motions and objections that we've made throughout this trial, orally or in writing. And in terms of my second judgment of acquittal argument, it essentially is the same as the first judgment of acquittal argument. The difference at this point would be that the court's now heard from a few extra witnesses, and I think those witnesses, especially Dr. Rapa, give enough for us to make an educated judgment that no reasonable juror could find against Mr. Ferreter. The essential element here that the jury is going to be deciding upon is the criminal intent. The actions are mostly in agreement by both parties. There's a few here and there. It is really a question of, was this being done for a purely torturous purpose, for a purpose of being simply malicious, or for a purpose of just for no reason unlawfully, in other words, caging? And I do think that we heard from Dr. Rapa, who talked about the history of the child, the different diagnoses, the interaction of the child in terms of the behavior elements, and how that informed the parents in terms of what they then had to do in response to each of those moments. And while we've all been here for only a week, I'm sure it feels like a month, but for a week on this case, they've lived with it for, somewhere in the range of somewhere between 8 and 10 years at least of Ronan's life. So from that perspective, their actions, and we heard it on the video admitted by the state, where Mr. Ferreter said that he was not giving up on this child, that what he was doing here was to try and right the ship, that Ronan kept conducting himself in a manner that was going to continue to get him in trouble. And this, while started when he was young, now he's 14 and it's still going on, where is this going? So the actions taken, and that's the key part of the statute, the intent of those actions was not for a torturous, malicious, or unlawful purpose. It was for a justified, lawful, parental purpose. And that's what I believe the jury instructions clearly say, and I think that's the decision upon which the court should grant the judgment of acquittal.
All right, so let me ask a couple questions for you. Do you agree that the standard, again, is at this stage, is that no reasonable jury could conclude that the defendant is guilty of aggravated child abuse? That has to be the standard that I look at.
Yes.
All right, so how do you deal with the fact that, and I acknowledge your representation of the testimony of Dr. Rapa with respect to the maliciousness aspect, but in order to get to where you want me to be, then I would have to totally ignore the testimony of Dr. Myers. And so my concern is I have conflicting expert opinions here that ultimately the law tells me I'm not the one to decide between those two. It's the jury, and that they have to decide, because there is evidence that both sides have submitted on that issue. And it strikes me as just part and parcel of what the system is all about, that when you have disputed issues like this, the judge doesn't decide it. The judge lets the jury decide it.
I think it's worth the court noting that the opinions on maliciousness by psychologists and psychiatrists are ultimately lay opinions. They're not in the DSM-5. These are opinions that these are their own opinions and observations, but those are not medical diagnoses.
Yeah, and I don't know that I totally disagree with that position, but I don't know that it helps your position on the JOA, because then you have to look at the conduct, you have to look at the circumstances, and those are things that really fall into the penumbra of what a jury would look at in making its own determination. So I don't know that that helps you. I kind of agree with you to some extent that those may be closer to lay opinions than expert opinions, but they've been rendered in this case as expert opinions. But if the jury disregards the experts' opinions, as they are free to do, then they still have to look at the facts and circumstances and make their own conclusion and arrive at their own determination as to whether it was malicious. You agree with that basic precept?
So the part about the experts, I don't agree in that there was a relevant testimony from them that does help inform the jury, and both experts agreed that the child suffered, there's evidence the child suffered from RAD, reactive attachment disorder, and both agreed that that would have been something that would have happened in those first 17 months or so of his life before he was adopted by the Ferreters. So regardless, both would agree that his behavior is very likely a result of the reactive attachment disorder, and that the reactive attachment disorder was present when he was adopted by the Ferreter. So they didn't create that. So it is a situation where they are now dealing with his conduct completely improperly, but they are dealing
right
with it as they believe parents.
But your own expert testified that the conduct, the response, worsened the RAD, the reactive attachment disorder.
100%, but that isn't the question before the jury. The question is, was the intent to make it worse, or was that their attempt at parenting?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Wahid. Anything else?
No, sir.
All right. Who's going to argue for the state? Ms. Black?
Yes, Your Honor. I would just make the same argument that you had made before on the first JOA. Based on the evidence that has come out, this case should be submitted to the jury, and they're the ones to make the decision as to whether he's guilty or not.
Okay. All right. Court's going to deny the second motion for JOA pretty much for the same reasons that I denied the first one, and that is that I think that enough factual circumstances and enough disputed testimony has been presented that the court cannot decide this as a matter of law, and that it will have to be decided on the facts and the law by the jury. So that's the court's ruling on that. So what I would ask, Mr. White, when you or Ms. Murad rest, you'll make your motion, stand up, and then I'll say the ruling on the record previously stated applies, and then we'll go into my reading of the closing instructions. Okay. All right. Anything else that I need to address? All right. Seeing no responses, I'll give you folks about a 12-minute break. We'll start back up at 1 o'clock sharp. Mark, we have all the jurors here?
We have all the jurors.
Okay. Do we need to go over what has been accepted and received by the court just as a matter of caution for everybody? I mean, I'm happy to do that.
Defense's large exhibit. I did let the defense know that in addition to the sustained objections yesterday that Your Honor ruled upon, there was two additional videos that I objected to, and it's my understanding that they're going to modify the exhibit.
It was that 18, exhibit 18?
Yes, and replace that exhibit. And then by agreement, there were a couple dates that we wanted to put on the record. There was one date that the state wants to put on the record, and then a couple that the defense wants to put.
Okay, so I have state's exhibits 1 through 22 in evidence. I won't state whether they're over objection, without objection, or whatever, but 1 through 22, does that, Madam Clerk? All right, so for the defense, and just make sure I'm correct here, Madam Clerk, I have exhibits 2, 4, 7, 15, 16, 17, and 18 in evidence. And as for ID only, I have 1, 3, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14. Does that comport with yours, Madam Clerk? All right. Mr. Wahid or Ms. Murad, is that any issues with that? Okay, all right, so that takes care of that. All right, we'll be in recess until 1 o'clock, and then we'll start with the instructions. Ms. Black, before I step off, these are the new reprinted ones?
Yes.
All right, I'll look at them just to make sure they are where they need to be. Okay, thank you.
Judge, if we can just discuss defense exhibit number 17. I never received that. I think defense is making changes to it. We have to review it.
Use the microphone.
We don't have a working microphone. They were getting new batteries.
Judge, we, based on the state's objections, it was only over four videos. We agreed to remove them. Because it's a 14-hour video, it takes a minute to remove them and then re-render it. So we will submit that into evidence, but it might have to be after closings.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Does that answer your question, Dana?
Yes,
okay. All right. Court will be in recess until 1 o'clock.
There's more to come.
Kid in a Cage.
Florida versus Timothy Ferriter from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Press subscribe now.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Ahora en McDonald's, te puedes llevar un $5 McChicken Meal Deal o un $6 McDouble Meal Deal. Así, hay algo para todos. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu Meal Deal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Keep cool this summer when you shop ceiling fans at Menards. Upgrade your space with a quick-install ceiling fan from Patriot Lighting. They're loaded with extra features that will make your ceiling fan install a breeze. Plus, they reduce energy costs, helping you save time and money. Save big on our great selection of ceiling fans. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Keep cool this summer when you shop ceiling fans at Menards. Upgrade your space with a quick-install ceiling fan from Patriot Lighting. They're loaded with extra features that will make your ceiling fan install a breeze. Plus, they reduce energy costs, helping you save time and money. Save big on our great selection of ceiling fans. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com. For all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now.
Save.